Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Chad Jukes, who grew up in North Logan, will be a part of a special event, a 9/11 Veterans Climb up the 14,000-foot Grand Peak in Grand Teton National Park. They'll summit on September 11th, which, of course, is coming up. And Hunter Woodhull is active in his junior high sports program. He's a wrestler and basketball player and runs track. What these two people have in common is they are amputees. Chad Jukes served in the Army in Afghanistan, and then in 2006 in Iraq. He lost his right leg below the knee as a result of injuries sustained in an IED attack. And then very interestingly, afterwards in the hospital, that was the further problem for him. Despite his disability, he's a very active and accomplished mountain climber. And Hunter Woodhull, as I mentioned, very active in his sports program, despite having both feet amputated when he was very young. Both men wear prostheses. There are advances in prosthetics. The theme of the program, adaptive sports and programs to help disabled people get out and get active, and especially disabled people who are out and active in spite of their disabilities. First up are my conversation, recent conversation with Chad Jukes, who served in the Army. He, along with other disabled veterans, are participating in the Bright Mountain Paradox Sports 9/11 Veterans Climb. They're summiting the park's 14,000-foot Grand Peak on September 11th. And here's my conversation with Chad Jukes. You're listening to Utah Public Radio. I'm Tom Williams, and I'm speaking now with Chad Jukes, who is from Logan, Utah, and lost his right leg below the knee as a result of injuries sustained in an IED attack in Iraq. He and several other veterans are going to be doing a climb on the occasion of September 11th. Chad Jukes, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
You too, Tom. Thank you for having me on.
So, first of all, tell me about how you went into the service and then about your injury.
Well, when I was attending Skyview High School, I graduated in 2002, and I was making decisions about my future and chose to enlist in the Army Reserves. Shortly after graduation, I went to basic training, and I was then came home to my reserve unit right there in Logan. In March of 2003, we were deployed, and I went to Afghanistan with a detachment of 21 soldiers, and we were performing aviation refueling operations in Bagram for 8 months. When I returned home, I actually ended up transferring to a unit out of Colorado Springs to deploy to Iraq in 2005. And, well, transferred to the unit in 2005. I deployed in 2006, and I spent 8 months in northern Iraq running conflict security operations before I was injured on December 17th of 2006, when my truck struck an anti-tank mine.
And so you'd understand a broken femur bone, shattered heel?
That's correct. The heel bone was injured very severely. I went through a number of surgeries, and after returning home in February of 2007 to Logan, we discovered that I had contracted MRSA, which is a very serious infection, in my heel bone. And after a short period of decision-making and attempts at saving the foot, I chose to have my right foot amputated on March 21st of 2006.
Your quote here, by the way, I'm looking at a website, mybrightmountain.com, Veterans Climb. You could go and check that out. Your quote is, you'd rather be an amputee than a cripple.
That's correct. I borrowed that quote from a very good friend and mentor of mine, Malcolm Daly, who went through a similar experience after being injured on a mountain in Alaska climbing. And he was very helpful in making that decision very easy for me. Of course, when I was first given the option to amputate, I thought that was insane. I thought, why would I chop my foot off? That's, you know, I saw that as a negative thing. After speaking with him, within a matter of days, I was on the phone begging the doctors to get rid of the thing as soon as possible.
You just felt like they couldn't restore function in the foot, so you might as well take it off.
That's correct. I mean, my prognosis was not good. Had I kept the foot, I would have been in very severe pain for my entire life. And I probably would have never been able to run. Whereas, to contrast that, 6 months after my amputation, I was in Washington, D.C., running the Army 10-miler.
So this was, you had, an active lifestyle. You wanted to continue that, so that factored in.
Correct. I mean, not living a lifestyle, being active in the outdoors, has never really crossed my mind. It's never been an option for me.
I guess that's opposite of maybe what some people would have done, you know, keep the foot even if it prevented you from being active in the outdoors. But that's part of who you are, I guess.
Correct. Yeah. It definitely made my decision much easier.
Mm-hmm. So they took your leg off, what, below the knee?
That's correct.
And then I'm sure you were fitted for prosthesis?
Yes. In early May of 2007, I was fitted with my first prosthesis in Ogden, Utah. And shortly thereafter, I was sent down to San Antonio to the Brooke Army Medical Center, where I underwent very extensive physical therapy and was provided with a number of different prostheses for different purposes. For me to wear out as fast as I wanted.
So to choose what you wanted to go with?
Yes, correct. I mean, there's a lot of technology out there, a lot of equipment that's out there, and I often did not choose to go with high-tech options, as a matter of fact, just simply due to the fact that I was looking to be active in the outdoors, and I didn't want things with computers that could break easily. But I mean, I have feet that are specific for hiking, feet that are specific for climbing, both rock and ice, feet for walking and running, etc. I even have a couple of peg legs.
Peg legs?
That I've built myself, yes.
Really?
Yes.
What reaction do you get when you wear a peg leg?
You know, people love it. I feel like a big thing with amputees and the public perception of amputees is that a lot of people are afraid to approach somebody that is missing a limb to talk about it because, you know, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. This, you know, this is something that's gone on for generations. And it's starting to change now because with advances in technology, having amputation is no longer really perceived as the end. I mean, just look at what's happening in the Paralympics. Look at what's happening, you know, all over sporting. There's a number of people with all sorts of physical disabilities out running triathlons. I mean, even Oscar Pistorius competing in the Olympics. And I find that when I wear my peg leg, it sort of encourages people to be able to approach me and ask me questions about my limb. And I appreciate that. I enjoy that because it educates people and it helps create a normalcy about this this condition that I have, I suppose, even though, I, you know, a peg leg is very far from being normal.
Do you think other amputees, yourself included, you would like people to approach you, talk about your condition? Is that an opportunity for you, or is that kind of personal? What's your attitude?
You know, it's definitely a personal thing for every individual. For myself, I've come to terms with my amputation. I've really embraced my amputation, and I really enjoy the opportunity to share that with others and to educate people on the fact that limb loss is not an end-all, that life continues after disability.
You mentioned there are all kinds of prosthetics nowadays, right? Including some with computer chips. It's an amazing time technically.
Yes, it is. It's really, really amazing. If you look at the history of medicine, medical innovation is fueled by combat. And while it is extremely unfortunate that we have to have young men and women coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan missing limbs, or even worse, of course, I mean, those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice, who have not come home, and the suffering that those families have because of that, medicine does evolve at a much greater pace during times of conflict. During this specific conflict, we have had a number of men and women coming home from theaters of operation missing limbs. Mm-hmm. And the government really has doubled down on their commitment to ensuring that we have the best technology available and that we're able to live the most productive lives possible. So I actually met with a gentleman recently from a company called iWalk to try out a foot called the Biom. And it is a computerized mechanical ankle that actually replicates the power of the calf muscle. So it actually, this foot has a high-tech motor in it that pushes off of the toe. And it responds instantly to what your body is doing. So, you know, it can tell if you want to run, and it will push off harder. It can tell if you want to slow down and just walk slowly, and it's not going to propel you forward. You know, it's going to just gently lift off. And that project has been funded. That company has received their funding from the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Because there's so many amputees coming out of these wars, I guess.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Have you tried out any of these?
Yes, I've tried out this Biom foot, and it sounds like I'm probably going to be receiving one of my own fairly soon.
Oh, good. So you've got many different foots for different occasions, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If you just joined us, we're talking with Chad Jukes. He's a Logan resident, grew up in Logan, did you, or...?
Yes, I grew up in Logan, in North Logan,
mm-hmm.
And I now reside in Ridgeway, Colorado.
Okay. And then went to the Army. He was injured there, and later a staph infection compromised his foot to the point where he decided to have it taken off. He, along with several other veterans, are going to be participating in something called the Paradox Sports 9/11 Veterans Climb. That's in Grand Teton National Park. The plan is to summit the park's 14,000-foot Grand Peak on September 11th. And we're talking with Chad Jukes. So tell us how you got involved in this climb.
I've been involved with Paradox Sports from the beginning, really. As I was in the hospital, lying in a hospital bed, contemplating the decision as to whether or not to have my leg removed, Timmy O'Neill, great climber, very well-known athlete, and Army Captain DJ Skelton, who is himself a wounded warrior, were in Washington, D.C., taking a group of amputees climbing, and they started talking about founding Paradox Sports. So, I mean, my history with Paradox Sports goes all the way back to 2007, and I participated in a vast number of events with the organization. So, for this specific climb, I got a call a couple of weeks ago from Timmy O'Neill, who is the founder and one of the founders and now the executive director of the organization, asking me if I was interested in this climb and asking me if I might be able to find others who were. And, I mean, of course I was, really. It was a no-brainer. I mean, the Grand Teton is an amazing mountain. And, well, September 11th is a day that, you know, it's very near and dear to our hearts. It's, well, I don't know about dear necessarily, but it, our lives changed on that day when those towers fell. And life particularly changed for those of us who ended up in the service of our country. And, well, most importantly for me, climbing is an extremely therapeutic sport. It's almost like meditation, but you sweat a lot more. And you get scared more often.
And that, these are attractive things to you.
Well, of course. Are they to you?
Well, it wouldn't be just to some people, but I can understand, yes.
So, yeah, I think that it's just incredibly fitting to have a group of veterans, including veterans who have been injured due to these recent wars, go out and perform such a grand physical feat on this day.
So you'll be setting out on, September 8th? You'll arrive at the park.
Then September 9th is actually when we're heading up to Jackson Hole.
Okay.
On September 10th, we will be undergoing a fairly extensive hike to get up high onto the mountain to basically saddle where the technical climbing is going to begin. And then on September 11th, we are going to summit the mountain. And that's going to be a day full of a lot of climbing. And then if all goes well, we're actually planning on descending to camp and even all the way down to the car that evening.
So on the summit on September 11th, what do you think your thoughts will be there on top of the mountain?
You know, I'm definitely going to be taking a moment to think about what's happened over these over this past decade in my own life, and I'm going to also be thinking about the sacrifices that so many have made, the brave men and women that were at Ground Zero that day, that did put their own lives in peril and to rescue as many people as possible. And to those who paid the ultimate sacrifice, both in those towers and in combat afterward.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Chad Jukes, a former North Logan resident. He now lives in, is it Ridgway, Colorado?
Yes, that's correct.
Ridgeway, Colorado. He's a part of a group of veterans, disabled veterans, who are going to climb in the Grand Teton National Park. It's the Grand Peak, 14,000 feet tall. It's part of Paradox Sports' 9/11 Veterans Climb. They'll summit that mountain on September 11th. Climb, of course, is coming up. Tell me a bit about, you have some interesting colleagues there, compatriots, including a lady who was in the Navy, I believe, and has traumatic brain injury. Also some shrapnel, a couple other amputees. The fellow leading your group was an Army Ranger and had an amputation because of some frostbite after the Army.
Yes, that's correct, Tom. We're going to have a very dynamic group, a whole range of abilities, and, you know, everybody in the group has one thing in common. We all did serve in the military, and we all have had some traumatic things happen in our lives. And that really, really improves the sense of camaraderie in a group of people. And it's really, I mean, it's a testament of will. And, I mean, everybody that is setting out to go up that mountain on September 11th is going to give it everything they have. And I feel very confident that we are going to have excellent success because of the characteristics that this group has.
I believe you go ahead.
Sorry, yes, I was going to say that Nicolette, the woman that was in the Navy, I've climbed with her before with a different organization. We actually climbed a 20,000-foot peak in the Himalaya in 2010, which there's actually a documentary about that climb called High Ground that is going to be released. There's going to be a limited theatric release and a DVD release on Veterans Day this year. And, I mean, she is one of the most dedicated, strong people I have met in my life. I mean, she was in a wheelchair after her injury, and goodness, now she's out climbing mountains, riding a bicycle across the United States. I mean, it doesn't end.
Hmm. Yeah, she had to learn to walk again, I understand.
Yes, that's correct. As a matter of fact, she had doctors telling her that she would not walk.
Hmm. And I'm reading here on the website, she said she's come to the conclusion the best way to honor those who didn't make it back is to really live.
Exactly. Having your life sacrificed is one thing. Willingly not choosing to live is something horrific, I think. And I see it happen. I mean, it's a decision that anybody can make, whether or not they're going to live. And, you know, you can do that in different ways. For me, it's climbing. People talk about the dangers of what I do. And really, I don't think what I do is all that dangerous because I do everything that I can. I take all steps possible to mitigate risk. But really, I mean, that's, in my opinion, it's better to take some risk and live my life than to not live at all. Mm. And I feel like that's what I would be doing if I was, you know, if I was staying at home and just, you know, sitting in front of the TV all day, afraid to go outside and face the world. I don't think that wouldn't be living so much as slowly dying.
Hmm. Now, I understand you'll be led by a team of guides and experts in adaptive sports. How does that work?
That's correct. We have some great folks who have worked in adaptive sports for quite some time. Folks like Timmy O'Neill, he again, you know, he wasn't in the military. He chose to lead his life in a different direction. He's a climber, and a phenomenal climber at that. He has a brother who is in a wheelchair after an injury a number of years ago. Him and his brother, Timmy and his brother Sean, have climbed El Capitan, and they have actually climbed in Alaska together, which El Capitan is a 3,000-foot, little 3,000-foot cliff out in Yosemite, California. So he has been around adaptive climbing specifically for quite some time.
And I could see how this is probably inspirational for someone maybe at home wanting to get out, lead a more active lifestyle, thinking perhaps my disability prevents me from doing that.
Definitely, Tom. I've heard that before. And, you know, one of the most amazing things I've been privileged to experience in my life has been to be out at an event in the wilderness, climbing or really doing anything active in the outdoors, and have a new participant along in the group. Somebody who lost a limb maybe recently, or you know maybe was paralyzed in an injury, who didn't think any of this would ever be possible for them. And they come out with us, and we take them climbing. We take them mountain biking, kayaking, whatever, cycling. And I have seen a number of people in tears thinking, oh, my God, I can do this. This is amazing. That's what I love to see. I mean, changing lives is amazing, and getting out and doing it, getting out and just, you know, you have to take your life into your own hands. You know, somebody isn't always going to come along and say, dude, get off the couch, you know, do something. You have to take that first step. You know, even for these folks, it was signing up for a program, and that's when lives start changing.
Is there a good place someone can go, a website or somewhere that maybe is thinking of taking that first step?
Yeah, I would, you know, I'd check out the mybrightmountain.com. They'll link you to the Paradox Sports website, which is paradoxsports.org. But we're not the only ones. There's a lot of organizations out there that are willing to, or that are, well, not just willing, but thrilled to help people with disabilities get out and be active. Logan actually has an amazing program, Common Ground, just right there in town. I actually never even knew about them. Well, I had seen their building. I never really knew much about the organization until after my injury. I've seen what they do, and it's great. They take adults with disabilities, kids with disabilities. They go out skiing, hiking, all sorts of stuff, riding bikes.
Well, we'll put all those websites on our website, links to those websites on our website. People can go look at those. Just a minute left. Tell us again, the activity is, it's for Paradox Sports, and it's a veterans climb in Grand Teton National Park. You're going to summit that 14,000-foot Grand Peak on September 11th. Chad Jukes is part of that group of disabled veterans. He's going to do that. They'll be on the summit of that mountain on September 11th. Chad Jukes is a former North Logan resident. And thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Utah Public Radio has a network of news correspondents that covers the state and the issues that matter to Utah. I'm Jennifer Pemberton, online news editor for UPR.org, and I love bringing our news stories to life on the web with pictures and video, in addition to familiar voices and engaging print. From the national parks of southern Utah to the streets of downtown Salt Lake, we cover all the great outdoors and the communities in between with all the technology available to us. That's what makes UPR your favorite public radio station for engaging all your senses in the stories of Utah.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about overcoming disabilities, becoming active despite those disabilities, adaptive sports. And we'll continue that theme following a brief break, coming up with double amputee Hunter Woodhall. He is an eighth grader at Syracuse Junior High School. When he was 11 months old, his parents made the difficult decision because of some conditions of his feet and ankles to have those amputated. He now, of course, uses prostheses, and he's very active. He is a basketball player, runs track, wrestles, is a normal eighth grader. We're going to talk with Hunter Woodhall, who recently was named Shriners Hospital's National Ambassador. He's been doing some traveling regarding that. We'll talk with his mother, Barbara. And if you have a story of overcoming disabilities to become active, we'd love to hear your story. And the best way to get that to us today is through our website or through email, I should say, upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. We hope to hear your story. We'll have Hunter Woodhall's story coming up following a brief break.
I'm Victor Hawkstrom, General Manager of Utah Public Radio. Thank you for the progress you've allowed us to make over the last fiscal year. Because of your commitment and feedback, we've improved our national and statewide programming and have promptly responded to technical problems. We've enhanced our Utah news coverage with correspondents throughout the state and now directly serve your community with specific programs, news, and specials. We
Did
will
you know
continue
that-
to work to remain your favorite public radio station for all the programs you enjoy, as we look forward to a long-lasting friendship. Thanks for your support.
Did you know that nearly half of preschool children in the U.S. do not go outside to play every day? And parents are less likely to take their daughters outside to play than their sons. Children's books also focus less on natural environments today than they did 50 years ago.
Did You Know That is made possible by the USU Emma Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services. More at cehs.usu.edu.
On this part of Access Utah, we're talking with Hunter Woodhall, who, when he was very young, had, I think, both legs amputated. That doesn't stop him. He is very active in sports, I believe, in the Syracuse area, and has been named now Shriner Hospital's National Ambassador. Hunter Woodhall joins me. Hunter, thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
So how old are you, Hunter?
I'm 13 years old.
And you go to Syracuse Junior High School?
Yeah, that's correct.
So tell us how the condition that you were born with and then the decision to have your legs amputated. I guess you, this is very young, so this would have been your parents making this decision.
Parents' decision.
Yeah.
But when I was born, I had a condition called fibular hemimelia in one of my legs, which means my fibula bone was missing. And then in the other one, I had a club foot, which means my ankle and my ankle was fused, which means it doesn't move, it just stays in one place. And they're both kind of like that, and they were just deformed in a way that would make me be in a wheelchair.
And how old were you when the decision was made?
I was 11 months old when I had my first surgery on one of my legs, and then the second surgery I had 15 months.
Mm-hmm. So you've grown up with the condition you have now?
Yes, sir.
So there have been advances, I'm sure, in that time, those 13 years, 12 years since you had your...
Quite a bit. Yeah. You know, and it depends how much you weigh and, like, certain things like that. Because if you don't weigh enough, then some of the feet aren't going to work for you correctly. And so it just depends on.
So what were you fitted with originally? I guess some prostheses of some kind.
Yeah, just a basic socket with a foot.
Yeah. And what do you use now? I understand you use several different prostheses.
Yeah, right now I just got a brand new foot. It has a lot more movement in it. And then I have a pair of sea legs, which you might have seen Oscar in the Olympics run with.
Oh, yes.
A pair of those, too.
You've got a pair of those?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Do you use that for running, or what do you?
Yeah, I use it for track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So you do run track. What else do you do?
I also do wrestling, football, and basketball.
So you are quite active. You don't let this slow you down.
Yeah.
That is quite interesting. That's, you know, that you can put on a different pair of legs for different activities, and I guess these all work quite well.
Yeah, they do.
What are your friends and classmates? What's their attitude? You're just a regular old hunter?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, when they first meet me, it can be some questions, but after they get the questions answered and stuff, it's pretty much just normal.
What are the questions people have when they first meet you?
Just like, how did it happen, and certain questions like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have them?
Tell me about the Shriners Hospital's National Ambassador. This just happened recently?
Yeah, about, I was chosen, selected in January.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't announce it till July 4th, the 4th of July.
And then what will you be doing with this?
Pretty much traveling around the country, and I've been to Canada a couple times because of this.
Oh, yeah.
Promoting the hospital, mm-hmm, and public speaking and anything I can help them with to support them.
I wonder what you would say to other people with amputations, other disabilities. You're very active, and sounds like you've been so all your life. What would you say to people in that situation?
Dude, there's no limit. I mean, if you try and you think that you can do something, you try to do it, that you can do it. That the sky's the limit. So,
what are some of the? You've probably tried a lot of different things. What are some of the things that you've tried that you've not let your disability stop you with?
Pretty much everything, you know. We got a boat last year, and we've been trying it out, and I learned how to kneeboard and surf, and I'm going to start to learn how to wakeboard.
Yeah.
So.
Very good. And you say you run track and you wrestle and do a bunch of different things.
I like to go skiing.
Yeah.
Do
you plan on? I guess you plan on continuing this into high school and beyond. What are your plans? What do you plan to do when you grow up? Do you know yet?
Yeah, I'd like to play football or basketball or some type of sport for Texas University,
mm-hmm,
and then go on to be a prosthetist, which is somebody who works on prosthetic legs, or a marine biologist.
Okay, yeah, very, very fine choices. We'll see what you choose. I wonder, Hunter, if you could put your mother on.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. I wonder if that was when Hunter was 11 months old, you made the decision as parents to amputate his legs, I think, what, below the knee?
It's actually through both of his ankles.
Ankles, okay.
Yeah. And it was a very tough choice to make that decision for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And we had about a year to research it and figure out the best option. And at that time, that's what we figured was best for him, to have a somewhat normal childhood, and he's actually had a very normal childhood, and it was a great decision.
So what did you talk to other people as part of that decision?
You know, it was hard to find other people who had the same condition. We were able to talk to a prosthetist who had gone through his whole childhood in the hospital with surgeries and finally amputated his legs as a teen. You know, he recommended it, and then there was one other patient there that we were able to talk to. But it was difficult to find someone with the same thing that we could talk to. So we just had to ask a lot of questions and figure out what our options were and choose what we thought was the best one.
And I'm guessing there have been changes in just the climate and attitudes toward amputees and other people in those 12 or 13 years.
You know, I don't know. We've We haven't really, we've been really fortunate, I guess. For the most part, people are very accepting of it, and kids are just, they're usually what happened, and once you tell them, they're like, okay, and they all go on their way and don't really care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we really haven't had a real big swing as far as that we've noticed, as far as like obviously the Olympics or things like that in sports, it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
But in his life, generally, we haven't had much of a swing in stuff.
And Hunter did mention Oscar Pistorius. I imagine he must be a big influence on people like Hunter. The
well,
Olympics.
Yeah. Anytime you can, you know, there was up until this year that wasn't even a possibility for him to even consider.
Mm-hmm.
So now that some, you know, it breaks down some barriers, it gives him and other amputees some opportunities that maybe they didn't have before.
Mm-hmm. And it does sound like Hunter is you know, just a normal kid with just maybe a, you know, a little something extra there. That's obviously how you and your husband have tried to raise him, I'm guessing.
Yeah, he's got two older brothers, and we never treated him any different. You know, it took him a little longer sometimes to figure things out, but he's always figured out how, if he wanted to do something, he figured out a way to do it, and we just didn't give him any pity, I guess, mm-hmm. would be the word.
Yeah.
Treated him just like the other two, and yeah, he's just done fine.
Mm.
And like, you know, he's considered himself, to him, he's just a normal kid. And he doesn't see himself as any different, and most of his friends don't see him as any different. So
mm-hmm.
that's just how he thinks.
So what would your advice be to parents, other parents in this situation?
Don't limit their kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think 90% of it is attitude. And if you'll give them the freedom to try and do what they want to do, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you baby them and you don't let them try, don't let them do things, then they're going to, that's how they'll be. But it's with, you know, it was a little intimidating at first. You weren't quite sure how much to let him do, but the only thing different is he doesn't have feet. He's got these metal feet. But other than that, he's a normal kid, and there's nothing he does that any other kid does that's going to hurt him any, you know, it's not going to be any different than any other kid. So
mm-hmm.
let them do what they want to do, and they'll be fine.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, congratulations. Sounds like you have a very, very well-adjusted son there. I wonder if you could put Hunter back on.
Yes.
Hunter, I was just wondering, you mentioned Oscar Pistorius, and that's got to be a great influence for you. Is that a dream that you have, maybe thinking about being in the Paralympics or Olympics someday?
You know, if I am going to decide that's a path I want to take, I'm going to have to be doing a lot more work than I am. But it has been an idea in my head, especially now since it's like somebody has actually done it, opens a lot more doors that I might have a chance to do it if I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely clears things up a little bit.
Yeah. I imagine it does help to have someone like that you can help you dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Hunter, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations with all you're doing, especially on the Shriners Hospital's National Ambassador. That's a big feather in your cap.
Thank you very much.
And good luck with all your activities.
All right, thank you.
Hunter Woodhull, a double amputee that happened when he was 11 months old. It doesn't stop him at all. Of course, he's very active in track and wrestling and other sports, and now has been named Shriners Hospital's National Ambassador. He's goes to Syracuse Junior High School, and we also talked to his mother, Barbara.
Utah Public Radio now makes it even easier to stay up to date with News at Noon on Twitter. This is April Ashland, UPR's social media coordinator, inviting you to follow and join the conversation about politics, local, and statewide events by going to twitter.com/UtahPublicRadio.
And we conclude the program with conversation about open source online textbooks. This is an item in the news that caught my eye, and we want to have a brief conversation about this. It'll be a little bit briefer. We went a little longer with the governor. I hope our guests will understand. We'll just get the facts out there. Sydney Dixon, the Utah State Office of Education, Head of Teaching and Learning, joins us. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And we're also joined by Diana Sudreth from the Utah State Office of Education, a Teaching and Learning Specialist. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
And let me start with you, Sydney Dixon. This is an attempt to make textbooks cheaper, and I guess this would be easier to update. This is open source online textbooks. Tell us in brief about this program.
Well, indeed, one of the benefits will be less expensive, but we also like the notion that if these textbooks can be printed off, that a student can actually engage with the text so they can do a close reading, write in the margins, make notes, think about what they're reading, make sense of it, rather than a traditional textbook where you would not allow kids to highlight and write in the books because they would need to be reused. So the use of the text and being able to use that as well as the cost is beneficial. The online textbooks, however, will also be interactive, so it allows for a student to engage with video, with models, with a variety of interactive applications as they're reading the text to make sense of what they're reading. And then the flexibility, as you've mentioned, makes a difference as well.
Diana Sudreth, apparently there have been some pilot programs, success there?
We have had some pilot programs in science in Nebo School District, where they have developed a couple of texts and been using them for a few years now, and they are showing success. They've been keeping research on it, and so we're very hopeful that as we expand to mathematics and language arts, we'll have the same kind of success.
Sydney Dixon, back to you. One concern might be, are these fully vetted? They're fully reliable? I guess something about having that in your hand and from a regular publisher kind of gives it that imprimatur of credibility. These are at the same level?
Yes, I think that's a very valid and important question, and these sources will be vetted and created by experts in the field, so university professors, experts in the content, specialists in the content, so the same type of writing and vetting that goes into a traditional textbook.
And Diana Sudreth, I expect that this is the way students maybe nowadays are used to learning, that interactivity.
Well, I don't know if that's how they're used to learning, because our schools are still very traditional, but we know that it's an area that they're interested in engaging. And so we think that the online textbooks will be more engaging for students. And then as Sid talked about earlier, it's also an opportunity for them to really engage with material in a more interactive way, even when it's in print, by underlining, by writing in their books, by tabbing things, and really being able to dig in deeply with their content.
Sydney Dixon, you're hoping that all school districts adopt this soon?
Well, as they get developed and we roll them out, they will be available to all districts. We vet them through the state office, and then districts have the opportunity to use those.
And will this be a lower cost?
Overall, yes. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, or as you mentioned earlier, even printing them off, if they choose to print the text, they can do that for less than $5, and then the open source is free to the schools.
Very good. We are out of time. Just a very quick look at this. Very interesting. Utah classrooms may still be making a switch to open source online textbooks. They're cheaper and easier to update. We've been talking with Sydney Dixon, Utah State Office of Education, Head of Teaching and Learning. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
And Diana Sudreth, Utah State Office of Education, Teaching and Learning Specialist. Thanks.
Thank you.
And no doubt we'll keep an eye on this and do a fuller program on this later on. Thanks so much. Access Utah Today, thanks for listening.